Blog Talk Radio.
I got ice in my veins, blood in my eyes, hate in my heart, love in my mind. I seen nights full of pain, days are the same. You keep the stage shy, stay be the rain. I search but never find, hurt but never cry. I work and forever try, but I'm cursed, so never mind. And it's worse, but better times seem further and beyond. The top gets higher, the more that I climb. The spot gets smaller, and I get bigger, trying to get in where I fit in. No room for a nigga, but soon for a nigga, it be on, motherfucker. Cause all this bullshit, it made me strong, motherfucker. So I pick the world up and I'ma drop it on your fucking head. Yeah, bitch, I'ma pick the world up and I'ma drop it on your fucking head.
Welcome to a live edition of Bald vs. Evil, a Detroit sports podcast. My name is Jeff Moss. I am joined tonight with my co-host, Gregory Henson. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Just got back from doing a long walk. I'm fired up to go.
Ready to go. Let's break down the GOP debate starting.
You want to laugh. My wife's as liberal as you, and she's dying to watch it tonight.
I'm dying. I can't imagine what's going to happen on this thing tonight with Donald Trump.
Did you see the report today that Jeb Bush called Trump a clown and an asshole? he's going to be standing right next to him tonight. And I originally and Trump said he wouldn't hurl insult unless somebody attacked him, so that might make it even better now.
Wow, your wife is as liberal as me. How the hell does she live in the same household as you?
She's a liberal.
You're like the Pittsburgh version of James Carville and Matlin.
Mary Matlin.
Yeah, right.
just switched.
Right.
She's the conservative, yeah. But no, that'll
so we haven't done a show in a few days.
You strain your vagina?
What? Oh, being sick?
You were sick all week. Just strain vagina?
Yeah, I dusted the sand out of my vagina, and I'm fine.
I talked to you on Monday, and you're like, man, I'm so sick.
Well, I went away last week. I was sick, and then I went to Philadelphia for a few
days,
make
anybody
and it
just
sick. Got worse.
Yeah,
what a weird city that is, man. That's a bizarre place.
Yeah, I live there a year, man. I liked it well enough, but the people are odd.
Yeah.
They take great pride in being pricks.
And my wife decided to take us on some, Franklin Institute, where I thought I was going to learn about Benjamin Franklin. Have you ever been to this
joint? No, but the Franklin Institute's like... isn't it glassware?
No.
What is it?
It was like it's not just like a place for kids, like to learn about electricity. You don't learn anything about Benjamin Franklin. And I'm like, we're like the only two people in this whole joint without kids. And I'm like, what the hell is this place?
Couple of creepers, huh?
Yeah, exactly. All right, so you want to talk about Dombrowski first, I guess?
What's that?
What, you want to talk about Dombrowski first?
Yes, absolutely. How weird is that, man?
Well, I mean, everyone expected it, I think, except for Anthony Fenech of the Detroit Free Press, who the day that, 2 days after that it had been decided that Dombrowski was gone, that he wrote an article saying that all signs were pointing towards Dombrowski coming back. I don't think anyone was shocked that in 2016 Dombrowski was not going to be the general manager in Alvula, or however hell he wants to pronounce it, different from his son. That was all predictable. I mean, I was calling Alvula the GM a week ago. I was calling him GM Alvula. So it wasn't a shock to me that it was going to eventually happen. That it occurred like this week is a little strange.
Well, I put it on my blog. I talked to some guys yesterday, pretty good sources, that claim that there was a final straw, you know, the report I put up on my blog, that there had been, something was said, I was told, that pissed Mike Ilitch off about him potentially being the next GM in Toronto, and that Ilitch was like, well, fine, if that's the way it is, then just go now. And that makes sense because they did it on Saturday. Was it like 2 days after?
The day after the deadline. The deadline was Friday at 4 p.m., and I guess the corpse of Mike Ilitch called up Al on Saturday at some point and asked him if he wanted to be the general manager of the Detroit Tigers. And it's just so odd that it would occur that quickly. And then even more bizarre is that they don't make the announcement until Tuesday. And are you telling me the future of the franchise, this bizarre move is being made, and they didn't announce it the day before or on Sunday because they didn't want to spoil the Dancing with the Tigers event? I mean, are you shitting me? That's the reason people are saying?
I can't believe that. But it makes sense. You know what I mean? The fact that no one told him. I mean, how uncomfortable would that be?
And what a position the spiteful Ilitch, Ilitch was involved in this, to put a man who's worked for Dombrowski for, what, 3 decades? He's basically been his mentor. And they put Al of Avila in a position where on Saturday he knows he's replacing the guy he's worked for 20 years and he can't say anything none of this makes sense. And the other thing, if there's whatever the smoking bullet is, if you think that something happened, and I'm a little dubious. I mean, I guess it's possible that Dombrowski could have said something to someone, but it's not like there's a court reporter listening to the discussions between Dombrowski and Anthopoulos to know, let's get back to Ilitch, that he made some joke about being the next GM, which he couldn't have made it to Anthopoulos because he'd be replacing him. So, I mean, I guess something like that could happen. But if that's the case, why the hell are we, were we at July 31st and Dave Dombrowski and Mike Ilitch haven't had one discussion about him returning next year? This is a man who, I've been critical of him, but Mike Ilitch, has praised this guy. He's, they've won 4 AL Centrals in a row. They own the Central. He turned around the team. You know the narrative. And Mike Ilitch never in public said anything really negative about the guy. I mean, if you told me that this was going to happen and there was a succession, and that I would have guessed that Mike Ilitch or Chris Ilitch would have had a press conference at Comerica Park, and there on the dais would have been one of the Ilitches, Dave Dombrowski, Al Avila, and they were, we're all going our separate ways, new challenges, thank you for your time, thanks for the division championships, thanks for bringing record attendance to Comerica Park. But the way this happened, a firing, it is, to me, the circumstances, the timing. We've been around since the 70s watching Detroit sports. It's about as odd as anything I can recall.
I think what you get with this is I think a lot of it is the Mike Ilitch temper. And you know that family can be very, very vindictive. I mean, you've seen it a million times. And so when I heard it, I thought, well, he did something to cross Mike Ilitch, because that's how it goes when you cross him, is – he gets pissed and he lashes out. He's done it a million times in the past.
Well, we can give some names. He did. Sergei Fedorov was one.
Yep.
He got pissed at
yep.
Fedorov because, he had already signed an offer sheet years before with his, Karmanos. And then he was flirting with the Anaheim Ducks. But what people really don't know about the Fedorov situation is Fedorov wanted to come back. He took less money in with Anaheim because Ilitch said, drop dead. You're done. You should have taken the contract when I offered. You waffled, and now I'm done with you. Max Scherzer said no to what Ilitch saw was a generous contract. And then the next thing you know, when Scherzer says, I want to play it out, the franchise nukes him, and they never had another discussion after spring training, again, with Max Scherzer about re-signing him. So you're right. If you do something – that Mike Ilitch does not like. He's like a mafia, you know, leader. I mean, you're dead. You're gone.
I know.
Don't mention the name. And
but then again, if you're his boy, you can be incompetent and stay forever.
Well,
I mean,
that's the thing. I mean, and there's the other dichotomy. Okay, so Dombrowski, who's really kept quiet. The only thing you heard, and maybe this pissed off Ilitch, but we didn't know anything about this until a few weeks ago, that there had been no contract negotiation talk, that he might be a lame duck. But then when Dombrowski's personal biographer, stenographer, whatever you want to call him, John Paul Morosi at Fox Sports, leaked out the fact that there had been no talks, and everyone knows that Morosi is Dombrowski's puppet. When he wants to leak something out, that's who he goes to. It's funny, yesterday, I predicted, listen, when Dombrowski finally talks, I will guarantee it'll be John Paul Morosi who brings out that message, and not 15 minutes later, that's exactly what happened, because he is his personal megaphone. And we didn't know any, so I think, you know, did Ilitch like say, well, look, this guy's leaking this out, but it just, like I said, there's so many things we don't know. We don't even freaking
know who's running this team.
We don't know who's running this team. It's like, is Mike Ilitch even alive? You know, we just found out that Mullah Omar is dead. He's been dead for 2 years. We thought he was the leader of the Taliban up until a week ago. I mean, do we have a similar situation with the Detroit Tigers? We don't know anything.
And that's how the Ilitches operate. I mean, they're never forthcoming about anything. And it leads to a lot of bad PR, a lot of bad press. I mean, the other issue there is the fact that not one of them showed up at Avila's press conference. What is that about?
Well, like I said on Twitter, I can understand Mike Ilitch. The guy's 86 and he has cancer. Okay, we don't have to drag him out. But
right. How
about he has some testicles, Chris?
I mean, how unfair is it?
Avila's got to go up there. Not only is he replacing his buddy,
his mentor,
he's got to take questions about the Ilitches and what their decision making process was. I mean, how unfair is that to this guy? I mean, I felt bad. I mean, I understand he's got a 5-year contract and he's going to get his lifelong dream job, but the position that they put him was untenable. It was unfair and it was selfish. Chris Ilitch, you were born into this world the son of a billionaire. You can't get up there and take a few, arrows and answer some tough questions from a media that's not exactly – we're not dealing with a bunch of Mike Wallaces out there. It's just pathetic. And where the future of this franchise lies, I don't think anyone knows.
That should be the more concerning thing for Tiger fans. And when you look at how this went down, too, it's like on one day you had Dombrowski making the trade. Who's calling guys up? Like, is Avila the one who's bringing guys up to throw?
I think Dombrowski was until the last second was making all those moves, and that's the thing. Now it worked out. All these the moves that they made last week, the decisions that were made. It all turned out well, but you were basically handing over the decision process, which is going to probably be the future of this team over the next few years, how these guys develop, the Boyds, the Fulmers, the Norrises. This is basically going to determine the Tigers' 2016 through 18 seasons, and you just let the man that you fired make those crucial decisions. It makes no sense. Yeah.
That's weird. But then again, don't you think that's mitigated because Mike Ilitch checked off on all this stuff? I mean, Dave wasn't acting in a bubble here in a vacuum. I mean, these were all checked off.
He announced to the fans that we were going to sell. So unless Ilitch was in like an island somewhere without cellular service, he had to know because Dombrowski called his shot.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think that's what. I think that's going to be the important thing going forward. Like you said, who's running the team? Do we have any hint as to who the owner is right now? I mean, is it Chris Illich? I mean, I know that's a lot of assumptions, but we don't really have any idea, do we?
All we can go by is what Al said, and Al said that it was Mike Yolich's call. He's answering directly to him. But, I mean, this is also the guy who said in his opening statement that we're in it to win it. We're not giving up on the season. And I think that could be something that pissed off Illich and what could have led to this also. Because Dombrowski, when asked about, you know, okay, you traded Cespedes, Price, Soria, instead of, like, you know, giving, you know, a BS answer, he basically kind of was straight about it and said, look, you know, I've seen crazier things happen. That was, like, you know, that they could still make the playoffs. His quote was, I've seen crazier things happen. And I'm wondering if Illich, you know, got pissed off by that comment instead of saying, no, we traded for these guys and we're using them and we're trying to win still and Miggy's coming back and blah, blah, blah. Because that's what basically what Avila said. And it was so, and he made such a point of it. It was almost like that was marching orders from above. Don't say that we're not in this. Don't say that we're playing for the future. We still have tickets to sell for the next 2 months. We still need to keep
right,
this illusion up. And I'm wondering if that pissed off, you know, we could talk about that. We're never going to get to the bottom of it. I think what we should talk about is Dombrowski's legacy here, because it's a little odd. You've got a national media led by the Morosis, the Jeff Bessons, you pretty much list off anyone. Peter Gammons was absolutely indignant at what happened to Dombrowski. There's probably nobody more entrenched and beloved by the national baseball writers as an executive than Dave Dombrowski. They think this guy walks on water. It's just unbelievable how he's treated. And, you know, people in Detroit, and I know you and I agree on this, he was a decent general manager. He might have been a good general manager, but he never got it done. And he had every inherent advantage at his disposal, being in a division, and I'm going to get to these numbers in a minute, where he had an immense salary advantage almost every single year of the last decade.
Yes, including this year. I mean, he's got a huge advantage this year, and he's in, you know, he's 10 games out.
Right. Do you want me to go over these numbers?
Yeah, go ahead. I think I saw you tweet them, didn't you?
Yeah, this is my Twitter followers sent this. This is the Tigers' payroll advantage since 2007 over the next team in the division. Okay, you ready for this? 2007, mm-hmm. $46 million. 08,
wow.
$56 million. 9, $34 million. 10, $25 million. 11, he said $7 million. I'm gonna have to check on that, but that was like the smallest amount by far. Back up in 2012 to $54 million. 2013, $67 million. 2014, $70 million. 2015, $60 million. Now I'm gonna ask this question to you, Greg. For an average of about $50 million a year over the White Sox, the Royals, the Twins, the Indians, what can $50 to $60 million extra in payroll get you?
Well, let's see. Get you Miguel Cabrera.
Max Scherzer. Miguel Cabrera.
Yeah, absolutely.
The advantage that he had going in was almost like no other advantage in any other professional sport.
Right. Well, the thing that bothers me about a lot of the fan mentality is they say, well, remember what it was like before. And I'm like, that's fine, but that doesn't mitigate the fact that they never won a World Series at times with stacked rosters. I mean, Prince Fielder, I mean, think about that. He was gifted to him. You know, the fans stun me in their defense of Dave Dombrowski. And look, you know me. I am not a notorious general manager basher, and I don't think Dave Dombrowski needs to be bashed, but he failed to win the ultimate prize, and that also could have pissed off Mike Yolich. The fact is they were in win-now mode for the last 6 years and didn't win now. So, you know, and you can play, and yes, it's a player's league. It is. But when you have a $60 million advantage, you should be able to cover mistakes. Like the Yankees
did all
those.
Well, that's the thing. He was able to write. This is the biggest factor. It wasn't the payroll. The payroll was so much higher. and I said this on Twitter, it was his ability to make big mistakes and then be able to just wallpaper them over because he could spend the money that Williams in Chicago couldn't spend, Shapiro in Cleveland couldn't spend, Dayton Moore in Kansas City couldn't spend. You know, Dayton Moore last year, when they almost caught the Tigers at the deadline, you know, the Tigers are trading for David Price, Soria, they're adding, you know, the Tigers got David Price last year because they were one of the few teams in baseball who could afford to add that salary. You know, that's why you got a David Price last year at a pretty decent for a decent return, because not many teams were going to be able to take on the remaining salary from 2014 and then pay him his $19 million or whatever it was this year because he was arbitration eligible. So
right,
every advantage, this guy had every advantage. Tim Diemer, who is a reader of the DSR and contributor, he made another great point last night that I had forgot about. Not only did the Tigers outspend all these teams by in the AL Central by these huge amounts, they were also the only team in their division and one of the only teams in baseball that during the time where, you know, the Major League draft, where there was slots, commissioner recommendations for how much a player would, you know, should sign for, the Tigers were just blowing by those and pissing off Bud Selig. They didn't care. They were one of the few teams, like the Yankees, the Tigers, there was very few teams who would ignore the suggestion coming from, you know, the New York office of how much you should pay these draft picks. That's how they got Porcello. That's how they got Castellanos. They were
right,
willing
they take,
to pay more
take,
money
they,
for these guys.
Well, because a lot of the teams without the money take into account signability when they draft. So guys dropped that wouldn't have also dropped into their laps.
Yeah, and he had mentioned Diemer and mentioned the infamous Cale Org, Garth Orge's offspring. It was a bust. But there's guys like that. I think Daniel Fields might have been another guy like that, where they overpaid based on the slot. He had every advantage, which, okay, I'm not bashing the guy. I'm not saying it was terrible. But when the national media and the suckasses in the Detroit media just fluff this guy, they don't even acknowledge that his budget was sometimes double what the next team in his own division, you know, was willing to spend. And there's no guarantee spending money is going to win. I mean, we've seen that in all over sports. But you're basically, you know, playing horse, and you start the game with HOR against an opponent with nothing. It's just
that's such an advantage. And that's what Steinbrenner was able to do all his years. Every time he made a mistake, he could cover it by just signing somebody else because he didn't have a budget. But, you know, and that's the great point there. You can paper over these mistakes. You can get the advantages were so ridiculous. And they got to World Series. They won division titles. But, I mean, after the first one, who gives a crap, right? The goals.
That's the other thing. They're comparing. It's like, oh, this team won four divisions for the first time ever. They'd only won X amount of divisions in their first 80, 90 years. Like, and that's the other thing. They don't take into consideration that the entire format has completely
changed.
Changed
in 69.
If you had two wild card teams in the 80s, someone posted the Tigers would have made the playoffs like six times or something in the 80s. They would have made it in 83, 84, 87. I mean,
mm-hmm.
So let me ask you this question then: how many apples to oranges?
How many of these division titles that the Tigers won in the Central? How many would they have won if they were still just East-West? None. Because they never had
a great point. That's another great point. They never even had the best record.
Did they ever have the American League advantage?
No. And this was in a division where other teams were doing it on the cheap. So not only did they have a huge payroll advantage over all the other teams in the Central, they had a unbalanced schedule against all of these crap teams that should have led them to at least one or two of those seasons. You know, Dave Dombrowski's out there saying, we never, other than 2011 against Texas, I never thought we were beat by a better team in any of the playoff series. Well, if you were the best team in baseball, why were you life and death almost every year to win the division, never getting home field advantage? when you had every advantage at your disposal.
Yep. I know. I saw all those national guys tweeting stuff. I also don't care about his attendance figures. You know what I mean? That helped fuel the engine, but that was another national media. 10 of the best 11 years in Tiger history were under Dave Dombrowski in attendance. I don't care.
Peter Gamblin had the nerve to say that this decade was better than any decade in the history of the team. Hello, the '80s was pretty damn good. They actually won a World Series, if my memory serves me, and they made the playoffs in '87 in probably one of the most exciting regular season battles.
Weren't they the last day of the year? They were the one or two winningest team of the '80s. I think Baltimore.
I think they were one.
Were they one?
I mean, even
I knew
those
they
other
were
years.
One.
Pretty sure they. I thought they were one, or maybe I'm confusing that Jack Morris had more wins in the '80s than any other pitcher. But hey, whatever it is, they were damn good. They actually got the job done one time, which trumps this 10-year lap dance that we received with no release.
You're saying we had a decade of blue balls? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, my balls are so freaking blue, I could be a Smurf at this point, Greg.
But think about the 80s, how much better that team was, with the possible exception of the starting staff. I mean, the teams in the 80s, for the most part, before the collusion stuff broke them up, those were really talented teams. The Tigers don't approach that right now.
I don't know. I don't know. There's some of the teams in the last few years, I think, at least offensively, were just head and shoulders above. I mean, as good as those teams were, they didn't have anyone like Cabrera.
There was nobody like Cabrera.
But
they had multiple guys who hit. I mean, did their infield at one time have 20? All of them hit 20 home runs. Or was that later in the eighties?
Daryl Evans and Whitaker and Trammell.
Trammell and.
Well, I don't think Perkins ever had 20 home runs in his career. He was the Don.
I was referring to the Darnell Coles year.
Oh, Darnell Coles, yeah.
I think he hit 20 one year. I think the whole infield hit 20 one year in the 80s. I don't recall which one. But the Tiger teams, their catcher was an all-star. They had three solid pitchers. Their bullpen was lights out. They were strong up the middle. Gibby could run into one every now and then. I mean, and they had some bench depth, the guys who would come off the bench and actually produce. I don't know. Sometimes when I look at this team, I'm thinking, it's like you said, they got a future. If they play their cards right, they can be back in it. But they got a lot more work to do, man. They got to get, like you said, during the offseason, they got to get a starter or two, depending on what Norris and Boyd are capable of next year. But you really want them to be your 4 and 5, don't you, next year?
Well, I mean, to me, I think what you've got to do is you've got to go out and sign one of the marquee free agents. Hopefully, to me, the guy I'd want, because I don't think Price would come back here in a gazillion years. Even if you told him here's $30 million a year for 10 years, I'm not sure he'd come back to Detroit after the experience he had here. The number one guy to me is Cueto. You go get him, mm-hmm. no matter what the cost is, and then you get Cespedes. And you add a couple bullpen arms.
But he now says he wants to be a Met for a very long, long time.
Yeah,
long,
I think we'll see. I don't think the Mets are going to spend the money. Don't the Mets still own money for like Madoff survivors?
I think so.
Don't they still have to pay that off? So I'm not really worried about them. So you get Cueto and you get Cespedes. You sign a couple relievers, and then you just hope the 4 and 5 spots can go to Norris, Bush. Or Fulmer, two of the three make the rotation, and then you've got Verlander, Sanchez, and hopefully Cueto. But the thing is, are they going to remain with this $175 million budget? And we're not going to know that until free agency starts, and when we see what they're going to do, because you can't trust anything that they really say. Because if they even say it, we have no freaking clue.
No.
I'm being told we don't have
no,
a
I hear
pitcher.
You.
What, did I say Bush? I'm being told we have a
Boyd.
Spiro's telling me we don't have a pitcher named Boyd. It's Boyd.
Wait, where's
how
Spiro?
I got Bush and Boyd. He just tweeted me and said that we don't have a pitcher named Bush.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was – I was going to say, wait, what about Boyd?
Yeah, exactly. That's who I'm talking about. I'm just a little.
How many people
it.
Are listening to this show right now? Do we have any live people?
I don't know. Oh yeah, there'll be plenty of live people. Probably. A few
but
hundred.
You can tell. Can't you look and see on the little control panel?
No, it doesn't say on. Yeah. At least on this. I don't see it.
So they're listening.
All right,
can we
talk about the local media's or the media's reaction to what happened? Because there was a few funny things that I printed out here. We could do since Olbermann's no longer on the air, we could do the three worst people in the world.
Sure, go ahead.
Let's hear it. Yeah, I think we got Mitch Albom, Morosi, and Fennec. But let's start with number three. We'll start with Frodo, the Keebler elf. This was what he said in the free press column when he decided to come down from Mount Condescending to
what? Mitch wrote about this? What is
he wrote
mean?
About?
He doesn't follow sports anymore.
Well,
but he doesn't follow sports.
He wrote his article about how people are crazy to get into an Uber. Because you might get raped or killed. Because I don't know.
Everyone
don't you always know?
Mitch.
Don't you always? Aren't you always personal friends with your cab driver? Don't you always know he's picking you up in a cab? I don't understand. But anyway, he decided to grace
does
us.
Mitch get a phone? Does Mitch get a booster seat with an Uber?
I think Mitch takes limos. I think when Mitch won, he gets either a town car or a limo. But this is what he said, quote unquote. In his column talking about Dombrowski. He's been with the team for 14 years, working in Dombrowski's shadow. He's also 57 years old, talking about Avila. I don't have a list in front of me, but I'm pretty sure it's unusual to hire a 57-year-old rookie general manager these days. More often, teams are turning to the Theo Epstein prototype, a whiz kid with numbers, computers, whip, saber metrics, etc. Now, let me repeat that last line. A whiz kid with numbers, computers, whip, saber metrics, etc.
What's the etc. part?
What year are we? Are you Amish, Mitch? I'm pretty sure that people in baseball, no matter if they believe in Pacoda or whatever advanced number RC plus, I'm pretty sure they had computers since like probably the 70s. And
well, Mitch,
I love
his first graphing calculator.
This continued idea from Frodo that whip is some sort of advanced metric. Hey, Mitch, are you listening? Whip is walks plus hits divided by innings pitched. It's probably the most basic stat ever invented. It's less complicated than earned run average, for Christ's sake. Will you please
it's not
stop
even
saying
algebra.
That this is an advanced number? No, it's so basic.
As long as it's not algebra, I can do
numbers.
It.
We got to find a guy with numbers, computers, whip, and saber metrics. You fucking dumb fuck. Oh, my
God. You know what
God.
That sounds like? That sounds like an old man saying, I think he smokes the pot.
Yeah, really. I think it's a guy saying, what's with this Uber? People just picking up people in cars? What's next? Let's go to John Paul Morosi, who, like I said earlier, the personal biographer of Dombrowski. This was his tweet. After talking about, you know, the response Dombrowski had to the firing, he said, quote, asked about bullpen issues, parentheses, had to, end parentheses, DD pointed to the impact of Bruce Rondon injury prior to 2013 postseason. Parentheses note he might have faced Ortiz, end parentheses. Okay, why the hell did he have to tell his audience that he had to ask Dombrowski this? Like, was someone out there upset with John Paul Morosi that he asked him a question that any Tiger fan would ask Dombrowski? Why did you never address the bullpen? He puts had to. Like, what? I can see Morosi asking Dombrowski, saying, all right, Dave, I got to ask you this question. I have to ask you. But why are you telling your Twitter followers that you had to ask him the most basic question that everyone wanted to know the answer to?
Right.
And then he says, and I love this Lynn Henning, John Morosi narrative, that the Tigers would have won the World Series if only they had Bruce Rondon in 2013.
Please.
When Bruce Rondon in 2015 isn't reliable.
I know. That's nuts. I mean, I heard that. I thought, Bruce Rondon is the whole reason they lost the World Series? Are you effing kidding me? I mean,
yeah, that's why. Because a rookie who had no history with the team.
Right. Well, he was good at Erie, though.
He's still – let me tell you something. If the Tigers somehow made the playoffs and we got into a playoff game, one game in the eighth inning, Bruce Rondon today had to come in, would you be confident at all?
More so than
Mr.
Sally Feliz had to throw.
Oh, my. We'll get to that. I mean,
it's insane.
Sally Feliz. That's just absolutely unbelievable, because we'll talk about in a few minutes about Osmus. But I got to play the third one. This is actually an audio clip, because this is just great. You're going to love this. So the gentleman who is my number one current whipping boy, Anthony P.T. Cruiser Fenech, who I previously mentioned, had posted a column 2 days after Dombrowski was fired, basically. Not that he knew. And this guy, he was coming back, and the reason he thought he was coming back is because he's still using we and our. That was Sherlock Fenech. Sherlock Fenech had the case solved, because the current general manager of the team was still referring to them as us and we. That must be a sign that Dombrowski's coming back in 2016, Watson.
Oh my God!
But it gets worse for
really?
This guy. Okay. This guy is a pathological liar. I pulled two audio clips that you've got to hear, okay?
Okay,
this
do
is
it.
This is after the deadline. He's on, I don't even know where he was. I think he was on, no, he actually was on Mad Dog Radio a week after we pranked him. Dan Wetzel, I guess Dan Wetzel has a show on there. Did you know that Dan Wetzel's got a program? He had him on. Can you imagine when he got the call? Anthony, this is so-and-so from Mad Dog Radio. Dan Wetzel wants you on the show. Don't you go running for Z Hills? I mean, how did you even agree to it, Craig? So he's on.
That is awesome.
So he's on Mad Dog a week after Sour Shoes pranks him as Mad Dog. And this is what he said about selling, about the Tigers trading Price, Soria, and Cespedes. Now, listen to this.
Dombrowski said it's 3.5 out of a wild card when you have 2 months to play, and they're seemingly waving the white flag. What's going on with the Tigers?
Yeah, well, it was one of those things where I thought all along I believed the Tigers were going to sell when I saw it. And the way Dave Dombrowski said it today was he just knew in their heart this wasn't a World Series caliber team. And in order to get themselves back on that World Series caliber level, they really had to face their demons, really.
Okay, first of all, he said they had to face
Liar.
Their demons. He said, but, Greg, he said they had to face their demons a week after Sour Shoes said to him, have you faced your demons? This is like, I don't know what planet I'm on.
Remember
the movie Big Lebowski? Every time the dude would hear something, like a few hours later or something, or the next day, he would mention what that person said, the exact quote. I think we're living with a real-life dude here in Fenech. Okay, so he says he knew all along they weren't going to sell. Now, are you ready for the clip where he talked to our Sour Shoes a week before? And when, listen to this, Sour asked him, what are the Tigers going to do? What does he think they're going to do? And listen to what Fenech's answer is.
Real quick questions. I know you touched with Ty. Today, the Tigers are 10 games off the base. They had the Royals in the Central Division and anywhere from 3, 4, or 5 games out in this precocious wild card race. After a very subpar first half, do you think they need to sell off David Price and the like, the other free agents on this roster, to reload for next season?
No, I think that right now the American League wildcard race is too bunched up.
Right.
They have too much talent in that clubhouse right now to be trading a guy like Price. I mean, we saw last postseason what a guy like Madison Bumgarner could do. All you got to do is get into the wildcard game. I think it's a little too early. I think the next, 4 or 5 games are really going to tell the tale here, because they're going up against Boston, who's been struggling. And if they can't win 4 or 5 of these games in the front office, might have to change their heart. But as of right now, I just
can you believe what you just heard? The guy went on a minute diatribe how they couldn't sell, that they weren't going to sell, they were two in deep, this was their last chance.
Dan Heron.
And they were two or three games back at the deadline, there's no way they could trade. They were three games back when they made the announcements, and then this guy goes on the real Mad Dog station and says, I knew all along they were going to sell. I got to play this again.
Peter Ross, he said it's 3.5 out of a wild card when you have 2 months to play, and they're seemingly waving the white flag. What's going on with the Tigers?
Yeah, well, it was one of those things where I thought all along I believed the Tigers were going to sell when I saw it, and the way David Dombrowski said it.
What? What? Do you smoke that much weed that you forgot what you said a week prior?
Oh, my God. That is brutal.
And the best is this. Sparrow just tweeted me and wanted me to point out. He said, please mention saying that Fenix said on his podcast that he knew something was up with the Dombrowski and that he might be gone a week ago. He said that on his podcast with Drew Sharp.
Oh, my God.
On Tuesday.
Unbelievable.
He wrote an article saying that Dombrowski was going to be back the next year because, of course he is, because he's still using the Royal We. Are you fucking kidding me? And not only is he's being embarrassed, the manager of the Royals, Ned Yost, when they asked him, are you surprised that Dombrowski's gone? He basically said, I'm pretty shocked because I read the Detroit Free Press today and they said he was coming back next year.
Jesus Christ.
What, did they give this guy a job? I mean, this he is the most over his head in a position that he shouldn't be in as almost anyone I have ever seen. Since maybe that guy who was running FEMA when Katrina happened 10 years ago.
Right. It's unbelievable. When I heard that, I was like, you got to be kidding. He just told Sour Shoes they should get Dan Heron.
Yeah, Dan Heron and Kyle Loesch. We got to
buy. Yeah, they're going to save it.
I knew how long. What
unbelievable.
A fucking liar. So that,
unbelievable.
That is the three worst people in the world for today. Morose
media
album,
people, right?
And the pathological liar, Anthony Fenech. The future of Brad Ausmus, Greg, what do you think?
Well, you know, I got to be honest with you. I think he should be gone, but I don't think he will be. I think Mike Gillis is going to stick
gone.
With him.
Do you think he's going to get fired or
get
yeah,
the
I
season?
Think he's fired. Unless they pull off the miracle of all miracles and somehow stay in this race and overachieve now, I just think that he's gone. And the reason
I hope
think
he is.
Gone,
I think he's awful.
I think Avila is going to want to put his own stamp on this team. And
so.
From everything I've been told by Tony Paul and other people, and Morosi even has said it, that Avila is more of a mathematics, sabermetric type of guy than Dombrowski was. And I just cannot imagine that Avila is watching this team for the last year and a half and watches Ausmus on a daily basis
mm-hmm.
and can say, I want to tie my future to this Mimbo imbecile. I mean, just today, everybody in the world who watches the Tigers knows when Anibal Sanchez gets to around 100 pitches, his arm turns into a wet noodle. This is not rocket science. He got through the sixth inning. I think it was basically were loaded in the sixth inning. He got a pop out, and it was 6-3. And, you know, I know the bullpen's awful, but at that point, with Sanchez at his pitch count, you've got to get him out of there. Everybody in the world knows it, except for one
Jim
person,
Leland
Brad
said it a couple weeks ago. Jim Leland came out and said, one of my bits of advice for Brad Ausmus is watch him like a hawk when he gets to 100 pitches.
And he was at that around that point, and he leaves him in, and a catcher, a backup catcher, who hasn't hit a home run this season, knocks one out of the park. In the first at bat of the seventh inning. So predictable. So now you got a two-run lead. He brings in a reliever, once again, who was waived and cut by the Texas Rangers a few weeks ago, a guy who makes Jabba Chamberlain look like Trevor Hoffman. Natale Feliz. He brings in this gas can once again. Pretty sure his ERA is somewhere north of 80 at this point. And predictably, he gets up a couple hits, gets lucky on a double play ball. Then he brings in Hardy, and they give up the lead, tie the game. It's like, why is Feliz still on this team? If you want to talk about we're still in this, why is he still on the team? And why is this moron still bringing him in high leverage situations?
I can't. I mean, the people who defend Oswalt are going to tell you, well, who else can he go to? But there are options. That, I mean, at this point, I'd rather have Albuquerque, wouldn't you? I mean, anybody.
This is what I said today. We're already have two-fifths of our rotation now. Parts of, you know, the young guys from the trade. We've got Collins up. We got Marte. We got these. Why don't we just go all the way? Call up Fulmer, who was lights out and unbelievable the other night, pitching for Erie. The announcers were saying, this guy, we don't want to really say this out loud, but this guy's stuff is not really suitable for Double A. He needs to be somewhere else. Bring up Fulmer, put him in the bullpen. You don't want to throw him a lot of innings anyway because he's got an injury history. Just throw him in out. Get rid of Feliz. Bring him in there. Let him pitch every few days in a key situation with his stuff. Let's see him. I know Jimenez is in Single A, but you know if he throws 100 miles per hour, let's call him up before he needs Tommy John surgery anyway. Let's get all these young kids. Let's have a party. I mean, let's watch these guys develop. We still have something to do instead of watching Feliz in this garbage in this bullpen. That's my opinion. I just call up all the young guys at this point.
Speaking of bullpen, did you see the Nationals put Pfister in the pen tonight?
Did they really?
Yeah, he's been demoted. I'm reading it right now. It says the Nationals have shifted veteran righty Doug Pfister to the pen. He told the manager, Matt Williams, told reporters after the game that rookie Joe Ross will take his regular spot in the rotation.
Wow.
Man, I didn't know his ERA was 4.6.
Yeah, he's been. That's what I said last week, I think, on the podcast. He's been bad, not very good this year. And they might get him cheap in the offseason where they wanted him. This was before all the trades. But, yeah, he is.
But he's losing
funny,
a lot
last,
too, they say.
The last laugh that Dombrowski had, and he can't even really have it, is that Ray's having a great year for the Diamondbacks. Pfister just got demoted to the bullpen, and he can't even brag about it because he went and traded Ray for the disaster that is Shane Green.
Right, exactly.
he can't even stick out his chest about it.
Cy Young, man. That guy's going to win the Cy Young. The Shane Green, Cy Young.
Yeah,
hey,
right.
What did you think of that list I tweeted out of the Tiger money losing years? Did you see that?
No, I didn't see it. Well, we've known that they haven't been making money with the payroll they've been sustaining.
Right. Yes. I mean, that should tell you a little bit maybe about what's going to go on next year because they're going to lose the most they've ever lost this year. Like
but the
$20
thing
million.
Is, I mean, that's a little misleading. You lose some few million dollars here and there every year, but the team that you paid, how much did they pay for it? I can't remember.
$84 million.
Is that what they
paid
for it?
$82 million, in 92.
And the team's now worth
$1 billion.
So, I mean.
Who, by the way, do you hear Armani say it was worth $2 billion yesterday? The Dallas Cowboys are the only team worth $2 billion, I believe.
Yeah, well, the Clippers, I guess they paid $2 billion, but they're not worth $2 billion either. But that was just
no, they were paid.
But yeah, it, Armani's not always very good with math. You can ask his bookie about that. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that he was off by $1 billion. This is the same guy who said this is the same moron who said he could hit 200 in the major leagues. Freaking Alex Avila can't hit 200 in the major leagues, but a fat slob radio host with a .9 rating at Detroit Sports 105.1 can hit 200. Do you want to go to a couple other topics before we go? We could hit on
definitely
Sleepy Sharp
here for the debate. What's that?
What? Sleepy Sharp? Drew
yeah,
Sharp?
What was that? What was that?
So you would know better than I would, since I ignore U of M football. What was it, Media Day? Media Day out
yeah,
at
Media Day.
Ann Arbor? At Schembechler Land? So
yep.
Drew Sharp and the rest of the media got up to Ann Arbor to, I guess, interview Harbaugh and whatever else they do at Media Day. And Drew Sharp sat down in a chair, and you can go to my Twitter feed and see this, and fell asleep. One of my DSR watchdogs took a picture of this. Drew Sharp sleeping on a chair at U of M Media Day.
How is that happen?
I tell you, Greg, you don't see those SEC columnists falling asleep at Auburn and Alabama Media Day.
It just, that is such a bad look to go to Media Day and fall asleep in a chair. I mean, Jesus, that's just, think about how that makes you look. I mean,
I guess, and from what I've told by people, multiple people who were in attendance, everyone else was mocking the guy. All his other media brethren were making fun of him.
Yeah, I don't get that, man. I don't know. It happens all the time, though. Have you seen the videos of Mike Francesa from the Fan of New York falling asleep on the air? There's
right.
one of Jason Whitlock splayed out in a chair sleeping.
Yeah. Well, you can understand Whitlock. The guy's blood sugar levels are probably off the charts. I mean, you understand why he went to fell asleep. The guy's like 700 pounds.
Well, yeah, and walking, you know, 20 feet would take a lot out of you.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's not cool. What was the response to the tweet?
Yeah, people loved it. You're not going to find a lot of sympathy in this town for Drew Sharp. So,
no,
yeah,
I mean, when you play that role on purpose and willingly, people aren't going to care.
Okay, the moron falls asleep and lets his picture get taken by not just one, but there's multiple people taking pictures, I'm told, of him snoring in the chair waiting for Harbaugh's latest discussion of Judge Judy or Judge Scalia or whatever judge that he was interacting with this week. So that was one thing that happened. Another odd thing happened last night when you and I were, I think, discussing among other people on Twitter how we were kind of terrified what the reign of Chris Illich would mean to Tigers fans, Red Wing fans, and your buddy, former Red Wing trainer, John Wharton chimed in and started kind of going off on you that you don't know what you're
yeah.
talking about, that Chris Illich is going to be – he actually said – now, these tweets have been deleted today, I've been told, by Spiro. That
oh, really?
He told you that – yeah, that Mike Illich – Chris Illich is going to spend more money than Mike Illich. He cares more
no,
about winning than Mike Illich.
I don't believe that for a minute. No way. Well,
so
I
then
John,
I get
John
involved.
John is the type of guy, though. John is a very hot-headed guy. I am friends with him. I like him a lot. But he gets hot-headed and belligerent as well. I mean, he's not much different than us. As far as that
well,
goes,
except for you've never, neither of us have ever been sued for child support.
No.
Or arrest
my children.
What's that? Yeah, you're still with your wife. Maybe one day you can get thrown in jail for not supporting your kids, but not yet. So I just said, like, I tweet out, like, shut the fuck up. What are you talking? I mean, how can you say something so stupid? There's no proof that Mike Illich is going to be outspent by his son or that Chris cares more about winning. And the only thing we have to really go by is it's almost consensus that the reason the Tigers had to trade Fister in the first place a couple of years ago was because they had to get Nathan, and Chris Illich ordered some salary cut before they could sign Nathan. This isn't even really
yeah.
a rumor. I mean, ask Tony Paul of the Detroit News
right.
if this is true. He will say it's a fact. And it's not my speculation. This is sources. This is kind of known. And Wharton goes off on me, starts attacking me. All I do is just put out a tweet of the Michigan.gov link to, you know, him being thrown in jail. And it says it says right on the website there was a plea bargain. He's on 5-year probation for back child support, which is pretty hilarious because on his – they every prisoner, they list, like, their tattoos and body markings. And on Wharton, it said that he's got a tattoo of, like, his three kids' names on it. That's, like, what it says on the website announcing that he got thrown in jail for child support. Then, because I post that, he threatens to sue me in Seema Barak Jr. fashion. Like, what are you going to sue me for? That I posted a link to the fact that you've got a criminal record? Take it up with the Department of Corrections in Lansing, buddy. Oh. Don't take it up with me. What do you want for my life? Then he has the nerve to say, I'm taking shots at him. I'm a nobody who can't play sports. And he's a three-time Stanley Cup champion. John Wharton, the trainer of the Red Wings, labeled himself a three-time Stanley Cup champion. Because who could forget that big goal against Dallas that he scored on the perfect feed from Slava Kozlov? You're a fucking trainer. You're three cups?
Wait a minute.
Are you kidding me?
That must have all happened after I went to bat. Because I saw him, he started calling me out because of we do a podcast together. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what difference does that make? You know, if you have a beef with him over something he posted, that has nothing to do with me. Not that I care, but, I mean, whatever.
Right.
That's the
Spiro,
so petty.
Are you there?
Yo, what's up?
Hey. What are you... So he deleted the post, Spiro?
Yeah, he had like 15 tweets that he deleted last night. I mean, threatening to sue you. You have no idea what laws you've broken. He did everything but the Seema Barak Jr. My legal team is lethal.
Well, he obviously has experience with lawyers because, you know, he's been thrown in jail and had probably to get bailed out.
I was taken a little aback by his vitriol last night too. It was really, really heavy for some reason. And the only thing I could think of was, why would you defend this guy? Why would you defend Chris Ilitch?
Maybe bailed him
well,
out.
Well, obviously, they must have been friends from his Red Wings days. I mean, that was clearly a personal relationship being defended there. There was no question about that.
But
I honestly think
him.
He was half. I think he was half in the bag last night. I mean,
I'm not making – the guy's very litigious, it seems. I'm not making any claims that he was drunk last night. That's his buddy Spiro, who he worked with at Blast, whatever, Pain. Or.
Right.
I'm the only person here not friends with the guy. Henson and Spiro are like his best buddies.
Right, right.
Look, this is not why I called in. I called in to call out Moss. Okay, so Moss is playing these back-to-back segments of Anthony Fennett contradicting himself. I could do the same thing with Moss last week in the podcast, being critical of the Tigers for calling up Daniel Norris immediately to start in that Sunday baseball game, saying, why don't you let this guy develop a little bit, work on his pitches, get him in the system. This is their rushing development again, which is their MO, according to Moss. And now this week on the podcast, I'm not disputing that.
I'm wrong.
Which time were you wrong? Were you wrong today or were you wrong last week?
I was wrong both times. I was wrong both. No, look, I'm just selfish now at this point. I want to see these guys. I just want to see them play. And I can't go to Erie and I can't go to Toledo every time. So selfishly, I want to see them pitch. But, you know, probably it wouldn't be the worst thing to keep them down until September. But now that I've seen them, I will admit, I am a hypocrite. We're all hypocrites.
Oh,
absolutely.
You admit
that.
You're fine.
I didn't lie. When I got called on it, I didn't lie and say I never said it. I mean, do I have to play this again? Hold on a second, ladies and gentlemen. Do I have to play it again?
3.5 out of a wild card when you have 2 months to play and they're seemingly waving the white flag. What's going on with the Tigers?
Yeah, well, it was one of those things where I thought all along I believed the Tigers were going to sell when I saw it. And the way Dave Dombrowski said it today was he just knew in their heart this wasn't a World Series caliber team. And in order to get themselves back on that World Series caliber level, they really had to face their demons and really...
to face their demons,
face
Spiro.
Your demons.
Can you imagine?
When you were doing the FedEx segment, I was dying. My lungs hurt from that.
Is there anything else you want to correct me on or contradict me on or backstab me on?
Well,
see, that's the thing about this show. That's the thing about this show. We will take all comers. I will take people who disagree with me, and I will man up, and if I was wrong, I will admit it.
Well, you were wrong about Ryan Armani saying that he could hit 200 in the major leagues, because he actually said he could hit at least 200, probably better. That was the actual quote. So
Spiro's like our personal stat boy. You're like our personal stat boy. You come out, he comes out at the end of the show and tells us everything we were wrong about.
Well, I'm very particular. I mean, you guys get about 83% of the things you say correct, but from time to time, there's a... I mean, it's a lot better than the average show in town. How about 97.1 talking about what's your favorite boat in the summer yesterday?
A boat?
What's your favorite type of boat? Do you like a pontoon boat or a speed boat? That was the topic on 97.1 at one point.
What led to this discussion, Spiro? The Southfield Fire Chief?
I don't know. It was flipped on.
Oh, man.
It was slipped on briefly and then slipped quickly back off. But that's,
coming up next on the Virginal Manatee and Doug Ann Arbor Karsh, we discuss, have you ever dove into Lake St. Clair to chase a hat?
Hey, do you want to know what Pat Caputo's post-game topic was on the Tigers post-game show last night? What's your favorite play in baseball, like the triple play, the home run, the double play?
Favorite play at a baseball stadium is what happened at the Hard Rock Hotel a couple years back at the Sky Dome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of idiotic topic is that? Hey, how about, let's talk about that for a second before we get to the end of the show. How about the July ratings for 105.1, Spiro?
What were they,
did you see that?
.9? Is that .9 that you reported? Oh, my God.
The two-year anniversary is next week, and the ratings are at an all-time low.
Are they outdrawing WBFH, the Biff 88.1 in Bluefield Hills yet?
They almost got caught by the by
another
gospel
station
music
that you're banned from.
Yeah, that's true. I am banned by that station. But
You're Biff so banned?
I'm banned from a high school radio station. Why don't you tell them that story?
Quick
version.
Steve Mariucci's children were students at Andover. Mooch was the coach at the time. And I had a high school sports radio, talk radio show that I hosted. And I brought in Moss as a guest, and he proceeded to rip on Mariucci, call him a bunch of names. And the station manager is like a 50-year-old guy, comes in during one of our commercial
breaks.
PSA. Yeah, PSA break. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. It's more accurate. The PSA break. And he sticks his head in, and he basically rips on Moss. He says he has Steve Mariucci has multiple children in this community. They go to school down the hall. You can't say that. You can't name call the coach. So Moss is like, oh, sorry. So the guy closes the door, goes back into the box. We come back on the air, and the first thing Moss says, he interrupts my intro and says, some guy with a beard just came in here and told me I'm not allowed to call Mariucci a moron. But he starts ripping on the station manager, who's a member of the faculty, and then continues to rip on Steve Mariucci anyway, calling him names. So the next time we go to the PSA break, the guy pokes his head back and says, he wants to talk to me and tells me you got to get your friend out of here. So he got kicked out. And then I was told that if I ever even mentioned him again, I would be kicked off the high school radio staff. We had a 3-strike policy at the Biff, and from my understanding, they still have that, where you can basically, you know, fuck up 3 times before they kick you off staff. I was given my first and second strike for that one incident.
Oh,
I was told any other mistakes, any other errors like that, you're out. So, yeah,
the name of the show, Banned from the Biff.
He was
banned
from the
by a high school radio station. I mean, it's a long list of places that I'm not allowed, but that might be my favorite.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Anything else we need to talk about before we get into our last segment here?
No, I'll hang up. Good show, guys.
You can listen. Hang on, Spiro, because you might want to give a little input maybe on this. So, and once again, we address things here. We don't hide them. A few years ago, Greg and I had some disagreements on Twitter. Very skillful.
It started with politics, right?
Oh yeah, well yeah, of course. It always starts with politics. I mean, I'm a bleeding heart liberal, and I don't even know what you are. I think you're just a contrarian. I don't even think you're a Republican or a conservative.
I'm a libertarian.
Yeah, maybe. Because I don't think socially you're that conservative. I don't really think you think gay people should be stoned.
No.
That's the bizarre thing. You got fired at Fort Wayne. You got run out of town by the Tea Party.
Because I wasn't conservative enough.
Right, exactly. So we've had actually three separate Twitter wars to the point where when we first started doing the Bald versus Evil podcast, my wife said, "Well, who are you doing with that podcast with?" And I said, "Oh, Greg Henson." And she goes, "Isn't that the guy when we were driving to Chicago a couple years ago? You were in a Twitter war with him, and you were driving, and you were making me say awful things to him on your phone." My wife, "That's the guy you're doing the podcast with?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that's the guy." Like, absolutely nothing strange about that.
No, not at all.
So we had three Twitter wars. And the third one was the absolute worst. Second one was probably second worst. The first one was really just about politics. So
right.
I thought to address it, we would have an act-out two-man play.
You really want to discuss this, don't you?
Well, it's not that we're going to discuss it. We don't have to discuss it. What I did was I got a Hollywood actor, local guy from Detroit area. I think he went to Groves. His name is Ian Reed Kessler. You might have seen him in the TV show Weeds. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. If you watch the show Justified, he played a drugged-out war buddy of Tim, who Tim ended up killing on the show. Ian Reed Kessler, this guy is a actor, a voiceover guy. I brought this guy in to play 3G and to play the role of Jif Mist. Taylor Phillips, who is a DSR reader and fan and who is also a voiceover person, who is on WCDY 107.9 FM in Cadillac. He does sports reports and updates. So there's three Twitter wars. We're going to play the first one today. On the next podcast, we can play the second one. But this is Ian Reed Kessler, professional actor, and Taylor Phillips. We're going to play you out with this with a two-man play.
Dude, weren't these
Twitter
brutal?
Twitter war number one. Are you ready? This one's not that bad. The third one, it's going to be the last episode.
Obama is going whining to the American public.
Good night, everybody.
Will anybody buy it?
Yes, I will buy it because the Republican Party has become a total bunch of horseshit in the last generation.
Sad. You were smarter than that.
Sorry, I support a party that believes in science, rights for all citizens, and separation of church and state. Hashtag GOP blows cock.
And high taxes, zero personal freedom, no fiscal responsibility, and income redistribution.
Personal freedom, like not being able to marry if you are gay, or the freedom to have an abortion, those kind of freedoms?
Sorry, bro. Obama is just evil. Yeah, he's been a trailblazer for gay rights. Are you kidding me?
He's no Michelle Bachmann or her husband or Sarah Palin. I'll give you that. Hashtag GOP blows cock. Compared to the GOP, he is fucking flaming.
That's just a lame, shallow shot. Nobody thinks Bachmann and Palin are real candidates. He's a moron and he's a weak leader. Obama is dumber than Bush.
Taxes for the rich are at an all-time low for the upper 1%. Yep, real distribution of wealth. Are you this dumb?
LOL. That is factually wrong. Don't lie and make stuff up to cuss and me and call me dumb.
You aren't real bright on the subject either. Listen to yourself. Lower taxes on the richest than when Reagan was president? Going to deny that?
Half in your Obama America don't even pay taxes. Brilliant. You are a talking point.
You are a typical white guy who is afraid the country is getting away from him. So sad.
No, you are a typical segment of the population that always brings up the same lame arguments. Don't tell me what I am. You are one of the dumbest, bitterest people I've ever heard in my life.
My household income is in the upper 2%, and I have never once complained about taxes. Of course, I'm not Exxon.
O is mine, but it is wrong to take others' money when most don't pay anything.
Not that the bitter country is being run by a black guy. Seriously, your politics are a joke. I am sure the poor wouldn't love to earn $200K and pay 37% in taxes.
You make a lot of assumptions that are just ignorant. I shouldn't be surprised after the way you turtled to Valenti on the Stony podcast. 37% is enough? Are you kidding me?
Greg Henson is like a dumb clown, a dumbed-down version of Scott DePace. Come on, Dairy NBA, get involved.
All you do is throw bombs, bro. No substance at all. Bitter and sad.
Dude, there is nobody in this world more bitter than you. Are you kidding me? How is that thriving metropolis of Fort Wayne?
Not bitter at all. You'd give your nut to have my job.
Which one? The one in Dallas or Fort Worth or Philly or Java Jungle in Detroit? My job is just fine and doesn't move.
At least people know who I am to recognize me as bitter. You aren't shit.
People see you as a total joke, one who can't hold down a job. People know Casey Anthony also. Good for you.
Dude, you aren't anything but a crybaby hack who can't get into the media. Sad, mean, and bitter.
You are right. I should have gotten into the media so I can move my family around the country every 2 years. Thanks, no.
Nothing wrong with moving around. Not like you live in a garden spot, genius.
Whatever happened to Java Jungle anyway?
Closed it, lost money, couldn't support it. That simple. Hey, Moss, you live in Detroit and you sell insurance. That isn't winning. Ha ha ha.
I don't sell insurance, dude. And I wouldn't want my kids to have to meet new friends every 30 months.
You are trying to hurt me, bro, and it isn't going to happen. I don't care. You don't even have the responsibility of kids, so don't even try it. You are a sad, alone, bitter loser.
You are the one that got personal over politics. You are insane, man.
Look back, bro. You started it by calling names. It is your life. It is what you do.
You calling anyone bitter would be like Sarah Palin calling someone ignorant.
My only regret is I responded, because you can't be rational with unstable folks. I know bitter hits close to home. Sorry, truth hurts. Difference is nobody knows you or cares. I shouldn't have indulged you. My bad. I fed the peanut gallery and I was wrong to do it. Go back to cussing every other word and being bitter. I am out.
Ha 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 ha. When will you be making the next move to Fargo? Remember when we didn't talk for 2 years and then you IM'd me out of the blue to tell me about your great Fort Wayne opportunity?
Doesn't bother me, bro. Go back to being a single little loser with no life, no girl, and no kids. I'll take collision insurance. Ha ha! Go away, Guat. You are dreaming.
I am married, idiot, and I'd have a kid if my wife didn't have a miscarriage 2 years ago.
Only a true nut would share that info about their wife. Go away. I don't want anything to do with you. Get a shrink.
I have the IM you sent me justifying your move from DFW to Fort Wayne. Like I gave two shits about your career. There goes the DSR podcast with Greg Henson. I will replace him with Kid Chris. They have had the same amount of radio gigs. Harold Letterman has me up 117 to 110 on his card. Greg Henson going to address your need to justify your move to Fort Wayne to me, you coward. Remember when Greg Henson told me that Fort Wayne was just a shortstop on his way to a big station like WGN in Chicago? This is good stuff.